Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed! They've gone into each other!
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of the Circuit of the Americas Grand Prix. One of the final few races that we have coming up now, and it was another very, very solid Grand Prix. I'm a big fan of that circuit. I always forget the elevation change when they sort of park at the start line and you look in, and the dip that goes up, the uphill dip, it's enormous, isn't it? From like sort of the end of the straight to the start of the straight. It's a crazy little dip that they have to go up.
Yeah, something like 35 metres of elevation from the start line to turn one. It is kind of crazy. It was a good weekend. I thought when we saw the practice sessions, I thought, oh, Mercedes really going to dominate this one. They've got a really fast car on the straight. They've made some tweaks to their engine and power supply packages, and they're just going to dominate. Max is going to, if anything, he's going to start third on the grid because that's probably the best he'll be able to achieve. And then, of course, we went into qualifying and he pulled it out of the bag. But if you look at Max Verstappen over the entire weekend, I mean, that guy is just phenomenal what he can do. And if you look, as we spoke before we started recording the podcast today, you know, that Hamilton and Verstappen finished that race nearly a minute clear of Perez in third. It just shows you how both people or both drivers just drove the socks out of their cars.
Yeah, we've had this before, and we have these rivalries when you get a Senna-Prost or a Hamilton-Rosberg, you know, these previous rivalries. Those two drivers always elevate themselves to a different league and a different level. And I think when you've been in a battle like that, it can only help you, can't it? Because like the likes of Verstappen, this is the first time he's really been in this situation where he can properly fight for the title and properly fight Hamilton. And, you know, he's learning so much. But I have been so impressed with how mature he is. You know, that was a real champion's drive, particularly from Verstappen, but from Hamilton as well. You know, great mega drives that we just didn't see anywhere else. And these guys are next level. But you've got to remember, Verstappen, I think, is 23 years old. Hamilton's kind of 36, 37, I think. But Verstappen is 23. You know, he's got so much learning and so much experience to gain ahead of him. You know, in the next sort of 7 or 8 years, when he's around 30 years old, he's going to be absolutely mega when you combine that kind of speed and ability and driver skill with some of the inevitable experience he's going to gain over the next few seasons. Just mega.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, we've talked about Max Verstappen's teammates in the past, and, you know, Alex Albon wasn't able to get close to him. We know how good Perez is because we've seen him in the Racing Point for so many seasons, and we've seen him win races and things. He's a good driver, but he still, you know, can't get very close to Max Verstappen. And I think that just shows how good he is. So I think with Mercedes' straight line speed and engine power this weekend, it could have been done and dusted, but Max Verstappen just drove the wheels off the thing, and I think it was a brilliant dominating race. Obviously, at the start of the race, Hamilton gets past Max Verstappen, which was good, and I sort of thought, right, well, this is Hamilton disappearing off into the distance, but then Red Bull played the undercut during the pit stops, and that succeeded for them. But Max still had to hold off Hamilton for the latter part of the race because he was really coming back at him.
Yeah, really aggressive strategy as well from Red Bull, which is, I wouldn't say it's unusual, but I think it's been unusual maybe this season and last season. They've been quite reserved with what they've done. And quite often we've seen a scenario where Mercedes have made the better call strategy-wise and it's gone in their favour. And I think Red Bull really took, pardon the pun, the bull by the horns this weekend and went, right, we're going to do this. We're going first. We're going for the undercut. And it was a great move and it turned out to be the right move. But just an all-round brilliant Grand Prix. Like you say, he qualified superbly. The team did really well with their calls this weekend. Verstappen drove the wheels off that car. Perez as well, you know, that's as close as he's been to Verstappen in qualifying. You know, he's always had a bit of a rough qualifying. So to get as close as he was this weekend in qualifying and to have the race he had, like we said, he was 40-odd seconds behind. But he did that without any drinks bottle this weekend. His drinks bottle was broken. He said on the start line, oh, yeah, it's fine. I think we can fix it. They obviously didn't. You know, and that's a hot race to do. And he said it's probably the most physical race he's ever done. But that's a hot race to do with zero water bottle and, you know, just doing his best, basically, wasn't he? But again, I thought one of the better races for Perez. And, you know, if they carry on like that, those two, they're going to win the constructors' title as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, you know, everything is pointing in the right direction. Mercedes have said that they don't think they're going to be able to compete on level terms with Red Bull in the next two races at least, and then they're kind of running out of events then. So if Max can improve his lead over the next two events, then it could be the writing could be on the wall for Lewis's attempt to win another world championship. I think it's important that we mention Formula One in America. I mean, it looks as though they've cracked America now, doesn't it? 400,000 fans there on Sunday, carnival atmosphere. It was a bit like an American version of Silverstone, if you like, and there are some similar corners on the circuit to Silverstone, but it was just like carnival atmosphere. They had loads of American celebrities there, which is always a good sign. They had, you know, sporting stars, and they had movie stars, and I think that's just great. Hamilton, I think, said after the race, it feels like our acceptance into America is complete. And most people would point at the Netflix series Drive to Survive for the increased popularity in America. I've got a friend in Canada who lives in Toronto, and he sent me a message. He went, wow, man. He said, I'm so into Formula One. This season is amazing. He said, and the only reason I got into it was because I watched Drive to Survive and just thought it was really dramatic. And it really is. And I think it's shaped a lot of people's view of the sport, and it's certainly improved ratings in America.
Yeah, and like you say, without a doubt, Americans love the show. They're very good at putting on a show. You know, Shaquille O'Neal bringing the trophy in a Texas Longhorns car and all the spectacle that goes around it, the helicopters flying over, the national anthem. You know, Americans know how to put on a show, and they always do that. And like you say, I think this Netflix show has been so dramatic. They've kind of watched this and gone, oh, you know, oh, man, this is, you know. And I think they need to get to know the drivers. They need to get to know the teams. They need to see the behind the scenes stuff and see how it goes. And, you know, there was some interviews with Ben Stiller this week, and even he said, you know, watching how these guys do what they do and watching the talks that they have with their engineers and the stuff they go through and the checks they do and the car checks and the person checks and the tire checks. And, you know, he was blown away by it all. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's needed, and it has been needed for quite some time, is to sort of have the behind the scenes. You know, we live in a world now where everything's transparent, isn't it? Everything's about reality TV. Everything's behind the scenes. Everything's, you know, in your face all the time. And I think that Netflix series has just done exactly that. It's really kind of brought the Formula One behind the scenes stuff to the people, and they've watched it and gone, yeah, love this. And then they've got into the racing knowing the behind the scenes stuff, which is great.
Yeah, and getting back to the Constructors, of course, now just 23 points between Red Bull and Mercedes for the Constructors' Championship. And that, you know, obviously Verstappen finishing ahead of Hamilton, Perez in third, and Valtteri Bottas, who had the engine penalty, could only manage six. So just 23 points between them now. And Red Bull, I think, have a favourite standing when they come to Mexico and Interlagos, which are the next two races on the calendar. Ferrari did really well. They had an engine upgrade and a new battery pack, which was introduced in Russia. And it seems to have made all the difference. So Ferrari are up there fighting, certainly with McLaren and other teams as well. Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz took some penalties, but Leclerc secured a very comfortable fourth place. And Sainz would have also probably been fifth had he not had a bit of a battle with Daniel Ricciardo. And of course, Ricciardo seems to love the COTA circuit, doesn't he? He seems to love Texas. He turned up wearing the vest and the Stetson and all the stuff and had the sideburns, which is great. And then he went out and finished fifth in the race. So it was pretty good.
I thought the sideburns that attached to the moustache was a particularly nice little combo that he had on his face. But you're right, yeah, I think 3.5 points difference between Ferrari and McLaren now. McLaren just ahead in third. But yeah, 3.5 points is absolutely nothing at this point in the season. So third place is literally anybody's. I think it drops from 250 down to 104 for the Alpine team next. So it is literally between those four teams for the top three: Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren and Ferrari. That's the order currently. But yeah, could be any order. Red Bull could win that. Mercedes could win that. Ferrari could get third. McLaren could get third. It's going to be an interesting few races.
I think Sebastian Vettel had a good race on Sunday. He started in 19th with an engine penalty. And we've both commented on his sort of attitude this season, where he seems far more relaxed than he did as a Ferrari driver, probably because he realised that he wasn't that wanted at Ferrari once Charles Leclerc arrived as his teammate. But he seems very relaxed in his attitude when he approaches the media on a Thursday afternoon, and he does Friday practice. He seems to be really on top of the car, which is by no means the best car on the grid, but he started 19th with a penalty and finished in the points in 10th place. A late pit stop and an overtake on Antonio Giovinazzi, I thought, was really good for Seb.
Yeah, it's interesting as well this year because all of those teams, when you put in the Alpine team, AlphaTauri, Aston Martin, as you just mentioned, Ferrari, McLaren, all of those teams are circuit dependent at the moment. Some of the circuits they come to and they're qualifying in the top 10 and they're having a great race, and then you'll go to another circuit and they'll be, you know, right down in 17th or 18th and having an absolute shocker. But you're right, he's much more at home in the Aston Martin team. Great bloke. He's really, really grown on me. I've always been quite a fan of him, but he's just become, you know, a megastar, in my opinion, in the last couple of years. And I think he's doing such a lovely transition because he's kind of going, right, well, I'm in the kind of twilight years of my driving career, so I'm going to put some focus on, you know, the world now and say that, you know, we need to be more equal and there needs to be more equality in the world and we need to clean the world up and let's, you know, clear up all these plastic cups and get them out of the stadiums. He's doing all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, moving into a sort of personality that would be a great TV pundit as well. So he's kind of covering all bases, but it's a lovely sort of transition he's doing where he's still a great driver, still a very valuable driver, but he's bringing so much more into it now. As is Hamilton, as Hamilton gets older, you know, he's putting a lot of money into some great causes and starting off a lot of Hamilton foundations and stuff. And it's really good to see them spending their money on that kind of thing, raising alertness and awareness to those kind of things, because they're all very important in the world nowadays.
Yes, they are. Alpine remain fifth in the Constructors' Championship, but it was a bit disappointing. Ocon didn't seem to have the pace on Sunday, which seems to be happening every other race. You know, sometimes he's pretty good, he's pretty up there, and then other times he just seems rather lackluster, which can't be the car, even though, as you said earlier, Scott, that, you know, some of these midfield teams, their cars are circuit dependent. But Fernando Alonso always looks as though he's got more consistency. We know he's a world-class driver, of course. He took an engine penalty on Sunday, but then was, you know, having some really good battles up and down the field, especially with the both of the Alfa Romeo cars, him and Kimi Raikkonen going wheel to wheel, was a joy to watch. But then, of course, he had a mid-race failure and had an early baff in the end. But they do remain fifth in the standings.
Yeah, like you said, you know, to see Kimi and Alonso, and I think they said in the Sky commentary, these two drivers have got a combined age of 82, and they were just driving the absolute wheels off both those cars. But, you know, both world-class quality racers, both world champions, brilliant, brilliant races. You know, it'll be a shame when Kimi retires this year because he's still got a lot to give, I think, but I also understand why he's retiring. But yeah, you know, Alonso's just brilliant, isn't he? World-class, 40, 42 years of age, somewhere around there, and he's just driving like that still. And as we saw in some of the previous races when he just wouldn't let Hamilton pass, you know, he still knows exactly what he's doing, that man. He's brilliant.
Nice to see Martin Brundle's grid rock was back in full on Sunday. He got a couple of Hollywood celebs, Ben Stiller being one of them, to chat to him. But then he, did you see the way the bodyguards of, was it Serena Williams and Shaqiri, or Shaq, sort of stepped up and went, you can't do that. And he was like, well, I can, because I've just done it. He said, yeah, after the race that he says that if you're going to be a big celebrity on a Formula One grid, you are a small fish in their big pond and you have to show some manners and respect.
Yeah, and that is true. I mean, we've both interviewed stars before, and I've found in the past that 9 times out of 10, the star themselves are lovely.
Yeah.
It's the team around them that are a bit, you know, you can't look them in the eye, you can't ask them this question, you can't do that. And it's a shame because I think quite often the star are actually, they're a nice person and they're up for talking. And I think we saw a couple of instances, didn't we, on the grid walk where the star was kind of willing to answer the question and then the bodyguard pushes his way in and moves someone out the way. And like you say, you're in our world now. So, you know, if you're going to come to the grid and enjoy the race, and I cringe a bit when I see some of these interviews, because you can tell that some of these people have never seen a Formula One race in their life. And they're like, you know, I'm so happy to be here. That just the cars and the noise, it's so amazing. And I just love it here. And who's your favorite driver? I like all the drivers. You don't know any of their names, do you? It's a little bit like that. And it's a bit cringe sometimes. So yeah, I agree with him. You know, if you're going to go and watch a Formula One race and be in that VIP pinnacle position where you're getting to watch the race and be on the grid and talk to the drivers and do all that kind of stuff that they get that normal punters don't get, you need to have a bit of respect for that, I think.
And I noticed the Sky Sports had their biggest ever highest day of viewing on Sunday. So they obviously had the Man United Liverpool game, which was a thriller. And I noticed whilst I was watching that match that they had Martin Brundle coming in during half time to say, listen, stay with Sky Sports. We've got the big race in America coming up. So the way they built it up, I thought was really good. And then obviously, because the race was in the evening, I guess it meant that a lot more people got in and watched it and realised it was going to be this big battle between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, I think a lot of people expected a bit of a first lap tussle as well. I was kind of half thinking, oh, what's going to happen here? And it's such a bizarre first turn, isn't it? Because, you know, you've got that climb up the hill and pole position's almost on the wrong side, isn't it? And you kind of, they turn in and the second place driver's like on the inside and then they're kind of cutting each other up and it was very much like, oh, I can see what's going to happen here. But it actually ended up where they, you know, were very respectful for each other. Hamilton obviously got the better start. And Hamilton got the first turn and kind of pushed Max off a little bit and was very aggressive. But, you know, this is what's great. I think Max kind of started that behavior. Max was the more aggressive driver at the start of the season. And Hamilton was like, okay, well, if you want to drive like that, I've got to win this title. I'm going to drive like that as well. And they're now at the point where they're quite respectful, but also expecting that from each other. So it's fascinating to watch. And these next few races are going to be brilliant. And whatever happens, you know, if Hamilton wins it, he becomes the most successful driver of all time in terms of world titles, overtaking Michael Schumacher. Mm. If Verstappen wins it, you know, one of the youngest world champions of all time, and how many world titles is Verstappen going to win? Multiple would be my guess.
Yeah, exactly. And it's Mexico next, and that's got one of the longest start-finish straights on the calendar into a very tight right-hander. You'd think the gloves will be off between Verstappen and Hamilton, and Red Bull seem to, over the last few years, have dominated in the Mexico circuit, so it's going to be really interesting. Let's get some stats and facts from Nicky at Lights Out. He texted me on Sunday morning and said, what are the chances of a first corner collision between Hamilton and Verstappen? He was convinced it was going to happen, and so was I, to be honest. Here he is with all the stats from Austin, Texas.
Verstappen takes Honda's first stateside win in 30 years. Red Bull reached 200 podiums and Alpine suffer a double DNF. Here are the top stats and facts from the 2021 United States Grand Prix weekend. Max Verstappen took victory at Cota, recording the 18th win of his career and overtaking Niki Lauda on the list of most F1 podium finishes. Verstappen's win was Red Bull's first in Texas since 2013, as well as the first win for a Honda-powered car in the United States since Ayrton Senna won at Phoenix with McLaren in 1991. Verstappen is the fifth driver to win at Circuit of the Americas, and the fourth different driver to do so in the last four races at the track. With both Verstappen and Sergio Perez on the podium, Red Bull became the fifth team to have recorded 200 podium finishes in Formula One. Only Ferrari, McLaren, Williams and Mercedes have previously reached that milestone. With third place, Perez recorded the 14th top three finish of his career. It sees him tie with Richie Ginther on the all-time podium list. Strangely, both Ginther and Perez took their 14th podiums driving car number 11, and both were powered by a Honda engine. Lewis Hamilton is the king of Cota with 3 poles and 5 wins at the track, but he couldn't add to his collection this weekend. Nevertheless, Hamilton maintained his record of finishing on the podium in all but one race in Texas, the exception being in 2013. The Mercedes driver now has 8 podium finishes at the track. This is the 11th venue at which he scored that many podium results. 3 drivers retired from the United States Grand Prix. While Pierre Gasly was out and recorded the Red Bull Junior Team's first DNF at Cota since 2013, both Alpine drivers retired from the race. It was the first time that the Enstone-based team has recorded a double DNF since the 2019 German Grand Prix. And finally, there were 3 century milestones in qualifying at the United States Grand Prix, with 18th place Kimi Raikkonen recorded the former Sauber team's 200th Q1 exit. Meanwhile, with both Ocon and Alonso out in Q2, the Enstone-based team also recorded their 200th Q2 elimination, and with the slowest time in qualifying, Nikita Mazepin recorded Haas's 100th Q1 exit since the team first entered Formula One at the start of 2016.
Nice one, Nicky. You can, of course, follow him across the race weekends with amazing stats and facts, and he's just got some brilliant stuff on his Twitter all the time, really. Go and check him out. At Lights Out is where you can find him. He'll have some more stuff for us, and we will be back to review properly the Mexican Grand Prix, or preview, I should say, which is going to be taking place on the 7th of November. It's a really late finishing season this year, isn't it? I think it's mid-December it finishes, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the final races on the calendar this year. They're very interesting. So Mexico traditionally is being dominated by Red Bull, but of course we've seen Mercedes in their impressive straight line speed. So I would imagine that's going to be a real fight again in qualifying and the race between Hamilton and Max Verstappen. And then we've got Brazil, which is a track that favours, well, both Mercedes and Red Bull. They've had similar results there over the last 4 or 5 years. Then we've got Qatar, which is basically a MotoGP circuit. So that's a bit of an unknown. Then Saudi Arabia, which is a brand new circuit, which has got some very fast corners in it. You'd have to think that Mercedes might have the advantage there. Abu Dhabi, final race of the season. If it comes down to the final race in the battle for the world champions, then it's going to be interesting. You know, fast straights that the Mercedes likes, and a really tight infield that the Red Bulls like, and also some changes to the Abu Dhabi circuit layout, which should make it more interesting for some spectacular overtaking in the closing race of the season. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, and if you look at the 5 races left, you got 25 for a win, 1 point extra for the fastest lap. So there's a potential 130 points left in this championship. And as I say, it's very, very close. 287.5 is Verstappen, 275.5 is Hamilton. So not matching it at all. And even on the team standings, you've got 460.5 for Mercedes, 437.5 for Red Bull, and then down to 254 for McLaren and 250.5 for Ferrari. So still all in it. All of those teams can do amazing things with 130 points still left on the table. So next 5 races is going to be mega.
Yes, certainly is. Join us next week as we preview the Grand Prix of Mexico. In the meantime, take care.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.